Hello, and welcome back to the LIBF Trade Finance Podcast. On this episode, we have Alex Gray talking to Eshithram Fernando, Senior Manager and Trade Finance Product at Scotiabank. Enjoy.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the London Institute of Banking and Finance Trade Podcast. This is Alex Gray, Head of Trade and Transaction Banking, and I'm joined by Eshithram Fernando, all the way from Toronto, by the miracle of Zoom. We're recording this over Zoom. And if you don't mind, I'll just shorten your name to Etchy, if that's all right.
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah.
So thanks for joining us. You are our you know, I mean, you've done five of our six qualifications. So I'll just reel it off. You've done CSCF for supply chain, CDCS for LCs, CSDG for guarantees, CTFC for compliance, and CITF, just the general overall international trade finance. And then through that, you've been able to get the QTFS, the diploma. So yep. Congratulations, well done to you. Would you mind explaining, before we talk about the qualifications, explaining how you got into trade finance? Because I don't know about you, but for me, I just fell into it by accident. Was it maybe a bit more structured for you, or how did you get into trade finance?
Yeah, so I remember in 1998, my first role in Sri Lanka was in import bill checking. And I chose to be in that department when they interviewed me. And okay. I didn't know whether I would like it first. As required in any job, I realized that it was up to me to understand the technicalities of trade finance to go forward in my trade career. I'm a person who loves attention to detail. Hence, I started loving the technicalities in trade finance. As everyone agrees, trade finance is a niche, and normally people don't easily understand technicalities involved around it. I strongly believe I'm still in trade finance after 22 years because I mastered those technicalities well.
Well, it's definitely, so yeah, I didn't say that. Actually, now you're at, you started in Sri Lanka. I just got a bit of a resume here, so correct me if I'm wrong. So started in Sri Lanka with HSBC, and then you went to the Maldives, and then to Dubai, and then you worked at Abu Dhabi Commercial Bank, and then you moved back to HSBC in was that in Dubai? Or no, that was in Vancouver, wasn't it? Vancouver?
It's Vancouver.
Yeah. Yep. And then you moved to Toronto, and now you're with Scotiabank in Toronto.
Yes. Yeah.
So that's quite, that's the one thing that I myself, in terms of the international career that trade provides to you, the ability to move to different countries with your expertise. And was this something you planned when you were in Sri Lanka in 1998? Did you think about moving internationally, or did that just, how did that come about?
I didn't plan when I first joined in trade. I never thought that I would be moving around in within countries to do different roles in trade. So just to give you an introduction, like sort of about my career and how it went around. I'm a trade finance professional with 22 years of pure traditional trade and supply chain finance experience. Like you said, presently working for Scotiabank in the capacity of senior trade product manager. In my global role, I'm responsible for trade product development and risk management, and trade product strategy in Scotiabank. So, like you said, I've been in Sri Lanka, Maldives, Dubai, and Canada. And like you said, I believe it is a rare opportunity to have trade experience in four different countries and be in different roles in trade finance as well. So I've been in roles, I started in operations, then I was in a training role in Dubai, then I was in a sales role, like you said, and now I'm in a product role.
So it's like you've almost, it's almost like you've been following my career, because I did a training role as well. And I think to do a training role, when you've got to teach what you already know, that brings your expertise up to another level.
Yes. And you have to be like sort of, you have to put yourself in that level because you'll be asked different questions. And you have to be knowledgeable in that subject thoroughly in order to answer to people and to share the knowledge that I have. So, yep.
Do you remember the first training course you ever did? I certainly do.
Yes. Yes, it was called Foundation to Trade Finance.
So was that the one you were delivering or the one that you were receiving?
I was talking about the delivering. Yeah. So I still remember the course that I was delivering.
And it's quite a nerve-wracking experience when you do your first one.
Yes, I still remember the place and the people that were there in that room.
There's that worry about what questions are going to be asked. But then after you get the experience, then you know some of the questions and you know how to facilitate, because there might be people in the room that know the answer. So it becomes more enjoyable after a few times.
Yes, after about a month, I know that you get used to it. I remember it was a 3-day program that I was running. So.
Yeah, so, it certainly helps. So when did you start, you know, in terms of your career, what would you say would be the most, so, you know, you moved from different countries and obviously worked with a lot of different people. What would you say was the kind of poignant moment in your career that kind of was a path, you know, led onto another chapter?
So I think it's in 2003, December, when I first stepped out of my home country to go to Maldives, when I was cross-posted to work in Maldives as a trade operations person, or in trade operations. Yeah, little did I know then that I will be moving from country to country, doing different trade roles. Yeah, then, after Maldives, then I got married in 2007 and moved to Dubai, where my kids were born. Again, never thought that I'll be in North America and to be a Canadian citizen and still be in trade. I'm sure I will spend the rest of my career in trade finance. And it is something that I love. So,
No, I'm with you on that one. And that's the thing. It's the first time you make that move to go overseas. That's a big step for anybody. You know, you're leaving family and friends. And whilst you can go back to visit them, you know, you've made that quite a big step. And then, you know, and then there is the whole aspect of you got married and then your kids. Is that moving with your family and kids? It's very much easier to move when you're solo, but there's a whole different thing comes in, which is, you know, I think, you know, if people are listening to this who are maybe embarking on careers, you know, often it's better to get some of that movement out of the way first, because when you start having a family and kids, it makes it more tricky. And so in that respect, you know, you're how old are your kids now? Are they sort of settled in Canada? You know, that's the whole thing, is staying in the right same school. It's tricky if they have to move the time, the schools and everything.
Yeah. So they are 7 and 9 now. So they are pretty much settled down in Toronto. So I did a move within Canada as well, from Vancouver to Toronto.
So they got Canadian accents, do they?
Yes, they do. Yes, they do.
Yeah, because my daughter, we moved to Vancouver when she was only 10 weeks old. We moved from Taiwan. And she, we left after 3 years and she was starting to speak, obviously. And she had a bit of a Canadian accent. But then we moved to England when she was 3. So the accent disappeared within a few months. Whereas it depends how old you are and when you're moving, it's whether the accent stays or goes. So,
yeah. Agreed.
And so, it's my daughter has her mother is Scottish, so she has Scottish parents, both Scottish accents, but she's got an English accent because she's living in England. And that's so the same thing with your kids; they have a Canadian accent and all the expressions and everything. An international experience for them.
Yes, they are fully Canadian, I would say. So, they socialize with their friends, and the way they talk is like the same way that they talk with their friends.
And then, you know, because we talked, you moved from, you know, I've lived in Vancouver myself. In fact, I think the role that you did in Vancouver is a role that I had done up until 2010, you know, the trade sales role there. So, you know, Vancouver and Toronto are two very different places, just in the climate. But do they differ in terms of, because I've never worked in Toronto, do they differ as a work environment?
So in Vancouver, yes, the climate is much more milder than Toronto when it comes to winter. And in Vancouver, I would say that I was going around meeting customers and enjoying the aspect of knowing, getting to know businesses of our clients. But yeah, when I went to came to Toronto, I was doing more of an operational role. So I was sharing my knowledge in terms of technicalities with stakeholders, salespeople, and product, and yeah, all the stakeholders.
And that's the thing, you know, sometimes with the experience that builds up over the years, it's very valuable for colleagues who don't have that. In fact, interestingly enough, I saw somebody recently who works for a blockchain company, and he mentioned that he was just a new graduate in Vancouver at the time. And, you know, he was fascinated by trade because of something. He went on a few calls with me, and it's just interesting that, you know, you don't realize that if you bring it to life, it influences other people. And, you know, trade as a career is not so well known. It's probably known to the people who are listening to this podcast because they already have an interest. We need to try and do things to try and bring it to life to people who don't know about trade, because it is a fascinating career. The ability to go and see different types of manufacturing plants. I mean, for me personally, when I was in Taiwan, my friends know I'm into cycling. So to see a bicycle factory and see how it's made from everything all the way through. And then of course, you know, in Vancouver, you go to see, you know, production of lumber, you know, from the trees being chopped down. Then also, you know, tech companies. Are the businesses in Toronto, you know, because to me, it's the two cities, Vancouver and Toronto, they're quite different in terms of the feel. I mean, never mind the temperature, but you know, you got the West Coast, maybe slightly more laid back than Toronto, which is more kind of, you know, the East Coast, North America, even though it's not on the coast. You know what I mean?
Yes. Toronto is a financial hub of Canada, so it has more. It's much more complex in terms of businesses and the way we do business. But Vancouver, yeah, it's mostly a export oriented businesses we get in Vancouver.
Very much is off to Asia. So is the Scotiabank? I'm sorry, I should know this. Is the Scotiabank HQ in Toronto?
Yes.
So are you based? So that's you're working in the HQ. Yeah, and that has a whole different feel as well. I mean, Scotiabank obviously a big bank in Canada, and but also, you know, internationally as well. Branches are, where does it have? How many branches does it have overseas?
Scotiabank serves 23 million clients in 32 countries. Established in 1832. Scotiabank is a leading bank in Canada and the Americas. It provides financial services in North America, Latin America, Caribbean, Central America, Europe, and Asia Pacific.
And it does have a trade heritage as well. So in terms of your role, it's on the product side, isn't it? So it must be quite interesting being in the HQ.
Yes, it is, because I have to talk to these people in the other parts of the world and to understand how their business is doing and to see whether the trade product is working well. Because in some part of the world, the products may differ and we may have to do certain changes in order for those products to work in this part of the world. So I talk to them, I have the control over the products and sort of, think about the strategy and things like that as well.
Because you know, the trade, you know, with the UCP 600, for example, there's some uniformity across the thing, but in different countries, different products for different markets. So, in terms of, you know, I'm just trying to imagine your business card with all your qualifications on it, because you also have an MBA as well, don't you? I mean, you're no stranger to a bit of studying on top of your hard work.
Yeah, I always wanted to learn and was hungry to understand more about trade finance. I wanted to upgrade my skill set whenever I got the chance. It has been a challenge, as you said. More qualifications, more characters, and designing needed for business cards. I also have an MBA and certificate in trade finance added to the above qualifications. Therefore, I struggle a lot to be in line with the set policies around business cards and email signatures.
All the qualifications that you got from LIBF, which was the first one you did? Was it CDCS?
Yes, it was CDCS. So I still remember the day that I did CDCS. It was in 2007, April 11th.
Okay.
So I registered for the exam, and I was getting married, and I did the CDCS exam 2 days after my marriage. So when I was getting married, I was nervous about my marriage as well as the exam, which I had to do after 2 days. So when I came to the exam center, I was in my honeymoon. So yeah, it was an important exam for me.
And did you pass first time, or is that a cheeky question? Of course you did.
I did.
Well,
everybody
done.
Expected well done. Me to pass as well, but yeah, I did. So, yeah, it was a tough exam.
Exactly, and that's the thing. In those days, I think we only had the exam once a year. Now we have it twice a year, April and October. Yes. Although this year we postponed April and we did it in July because of obvious reasons. But not everybody could do it in April. I mean, July. So in October, we'll have a large cohort doing. But it is designed as a qualification not to be easy. And we've done some webinars. You know, we haven't done a podcast for a long time. We've done some webinars about the qualifications. And we had Gary Collier coming on talking about the exam and how to approach it, because it's not easy. It's designed to be a challenge. And therefore, people who get it should be seen by their senior managers, by their colleagues and peers, as somebody who's willing to apply themselves and work very hard. So there's a lot of hard work. Results were just released last weekend, and good to see a high pass rate. And you know, with some of the people maybe having a bit more time to do a bit more work with it being locked down. So that was CDCS. And do you remember which order you did them in? Because you've done so many.
Yeah, so on CDCS, I have to mention that I recertified for the fourth time this year. So I'm looking forward to come and take my CDCS Advocate Certificate in LIBF in 2023. So I'm hoping that I would be the first from North America, keeping my fingers crossed on that. So,
sure. I don't think you have a problem with all the stuff you're doing. Because I just joined LIBF in January. I wasn't aware of the Advocate program until a few months ago. And that's for people who recertify five times. So that's 15 years of commitment to the cause, as it were. So,
yeah.
And, you know, the story of doing the exam 2 days after your wedding. I got married on the 9th of October, and 2 days later after my wedding was my birthday, so I wouldn't have done my exam on my birthday. But no, good on you. So that, yeah, I'm sure that the advocacy thing is a great thing, and that will add to your all your achievements. So do you remember, so you did CTCS, and then what was the next one after that?
Yeah, in 2009 I did my CITF.
Okay.
That was the next one that came up in Liberia. And then I did the CSCF.
Yeah. That's on supply chain.
Yes. That's in 2018, I think.
Okay.
Oh, sorry. Before CSCF, I did CSDG.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
The guarantees. Then the CSCF, then the CTFC.
And so CTFC being for trade finance compliance, which,
yes,
you know, is a newer qualification. But, you know, what's interesting is when I'm talking about in my previous career, and you're similar to myself in terms of you've done sales roles and ops roles. You know, some people in trade have that, but some people are more on one side than the other. So that's showing you've got both sides with the CITF, then also to do those ops ones. And that's a lot of work. You know, even the people that are actually sitting in those roles is very much a challenge. So, you know, congratulations on all that work. So having those qualifications, I mean, obviously, you know, you're a bit of a qualification junkie. There's one missing, CertPay. You haven't done CertPay yet. Is there a particular reason why you haven't CertPay this? You know, payments, you could say it's more on the transaction banking side. Is that something you would like to do, or is it? I'm just curious as to. I mean, I know no pressure. You don't have to do it next week, but because you can do it on demand whenever you want. But is there a particular reason why not on that one yet?
I'm thinking about it for sure, but since it was not directly related to trade, I was delaying it. So yeah, that's something that I would think about in the future.
Yeah, well, no, it is exactly. It's not directly, but it's transaction banking, so related to the payment side, and it does relate. And you might find, by having done so many other qualifications, a lot of it will be, you know, you'll be known to. But that exam is on demand now, so you can do it whenever. And soon, by the end of the year, we'll have all four on-demand exams will be able to be do by remote invigilation. So, you know, for you in Toronto, it's probably quite easy to go to a test venue. But for some people in more remote places, they would be able to do it remotely, maybe in their house if they have the right conditions, or maybe in a meeting room in their office so they don't have to travel. So that's something we're looking at. So in terms, do you think those qualifications of, I mean, maybe it's stating the obvious, but have they helped you with your career? You know, have you used them effectively for your career as you moved around?
Yes, it certainly did. The advanced and additional knowledge I got from the exams helped me a great deal in my transaction processing, transaction approving as head of trade finance and training and product roles. Sometimes in trade finance, as leaders, our teams expect us to know everything around trade technicalities and trade issues, queries, or structuring of transactions and or facilities. Therefore, as an operations leader, trade trainer, salesperson, product manager, the advanced knowledge gained through these level 4 certifications helped me critically analyze, apply and mitigate risk for the bank and advise and provide solutions to our customers and stakeholders. Almost everyone looked up to me when there is an issue or a complicated transaction or a new complicated trade structures for a client. I must confess, there are past colleagues who still call me. They will take an international call when they have a complicated trade transaction. Issues or need solutions. So they can get trade advice from me.
That's great.
I believe it's an evidence that I have made an impact in their lives by guiding them in the proper direction. So these qualifications helped me a lot in terms of doing that.
Well, it's interesting what you say, because trade is very much a family. You know, colleagues of mine from HSBC were still in touch with each other, you know, in WhatsApp groups and LinkedIn, and just sharing examples. And people I used to work in trade world will ask me about various things, and I will go to them and ask them various things. So even though you're in different organizations, you know, and obviously there's elements of confidentiality about customers and specific deals, but you can still talk about how an LC works or a guarantee works. And because you work with people, there's that family aspect, and people always want to help. And if you go to conferences, you see people you used to work with. Not so easy going to conferences at the moment. So you might not recognize a friend as a small picture on a Zoom call. But, you know, it's been the lockdown has been a chance to reconnect with a number of people. Because, you know, what we talk to people about the qualifications, and if somebody is looking to recruit, you know, the CV stands out. And I'd like to think that maybe that happened when you were going to Scotiabank, because they're going to go, well, he's got so many qualifications. He knows about LCs, guarantees, supply chain, and then they're all over in, you know, the compliance side. So, but what do you think their perspective was when, do you think that helped you when you were going for your role? Because you must have been against other people, and you were the one that got the job.
Yeah, surely, because having knowledge and recruiting the person who has knowledge, all these technicalities, and having those qualifications against your name counts a lot when you're being interviewed for a job, or when you're being looked at for a different role, or like, so I think it it was an advantage that I always would have in my mind by having these kinds of qualification. And the other thing I have to say is trade. If, like you said, if you look at trade, it has four main sections. Like it's traditional trade, it's guarantees, supply chain and finance, and the compliance aspect that has got more important within this decade, right?
So, definitely. As people who worked at HSBC, we know about that.
And I think having somebody certifying that you're qualified and you know around these technicalities to the level that you should know would always help when somebody moves forward in the career.
Because each qualification takes about over 200 hours, you know, sort of 200 hours minimum to do. And, you know, I find when I'm looking at the compliance one, there's the reading material, which you can do online, or some people like to use the books. We're finding a lot of people are using the online. 73% of our students use online. There's all the material, but then there's other links and you can go and have a look at other things and it becomes fascinating. So I think for yourself, Echi, you've probably done, you know, each time you've done more than the prescribed number of hours. But if you're looking, you've done five qualifications. Yeah, that's, let's say, minimum 200 hours each. That's 1,000 hours. never mind, that's a minimum of 1,000 hours you do. This is amazing, the dedication that you had to this. And also, never mind how many thousands of hours must you have done for the MBA. So well done to you. And it's great to see your career moving strength to strength. And, you know, in Canada also, you know, having lived there, a great place to live as well, live and work.
Yeah. So it's not only about the exams, right? After you do the exams, you have to do the professional development units as well, right? The PDUs. So those are something that continue to develop students after doing these courses as well. So as a result of these courses, so I'm getting more involved in trade webinars, compliance webinars, trade conferences, trade programs developed by other trade partners. As an example, DC Master, URDG Master, yeah. IFP Master is something that I have done. And I regularly attend BAF committee meetings. And I'm part of a subgroup looking at IBO transition and sustainability of suitability of risk-free rate for trade finance with BAF. Yeah, so LIBF exams encourages you to get more involved in trade matters than you did in the past, for sure.
It also helps, you know, with your widening your network. You know, no doubt from doing this podcast, that will help, you know, as we both publicize it to our connections on LinkedIn when we've done it, maybe widen your network as well. So that's good. I mean, and that's excellent. I mean, the thing is, so some of the qualifications you have to recertify, so that involves doing extra work. And what's interesting is that it's been a bit more tricky because some people are in countries where they would have done those units, the CPD or PDUs, professional development units, by going to various conferences or courses. Not so easy now at the moment. So with the webinars we've done, we've allowed that to be CPDs. And, you know, we're trying to adapt the way to help people to be recertified and working with our various partners around. So it's great to see that you've been doing, helping people as well. Excellent. Thinking about, you know, your career in the past, what, you know, you're still a young man. So, well, compared to me, I mean, you know, but I was thinking about what do you think of yourself in the future for your career? What do you see? You see yourself, you're settled in Canada, and then, never say never, but where do you think, never mind about your location, but what about your future roles that you're interested in and aspiring to?
I think it would be mainly in North America because I have settled down and, like you said, I have two kids now, so it could be harder for me to move around now. Maybe after my kids have grown up, then maybe that's something that I can look at again. But at the moment, I would be in North America. What I love in North America is trade and supply chain is a growing product in North America. So North America always had been an open account market, and financing had been via overdraft and corporate loans compared to trade finance in Asia. As you know, overdraft and corporate loan is a last resort for working capital in Asia. Growing trade product in North America needs experts. So these experts must be qualified to understand the products and structures in depth so they can advise stakeholders, mitigate risk, and develop products and to enhance profitability to customers and institutions. So I think I have found a place where I can add value in order for trade finance.
It's definitely, you know, with having that Asian trade experience where trade is far more the norm, and then coming to North America, you can share that experience. And you know, your network from being out in Asia and in the Middle East will help other people. So, you know, I'm sure there'll be plenty of opportunities for you in the future. And, you know, who ever knows, you know, ahead of trade at some point. Certainly, with all your experience, I would see that happening myself. So I'd just like to say thanks ever so much, Etchi, for joining us all the way from Toronto. I know it's early in the morning, 6 a.m. for you. So thanks very much for doing that for me today. And I know you're about to go and do start your actual proper day's work. So I hope you're going to have a good day. But we'll just like to say thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks, Alex. Thanks for having me.
Okay. Thank you. Goodbye.
Goodbye. Thank you.
Thank you for listening. If you want to hear more, then always consider subscribing on your chosen podcast platform. To view more about our trade finance qualifications, go to lrbf.ac.uk/tradefinance.